Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world. And now your hosts, Yog and Manish.
Maximizing the remote possibilities of content marketing. That is what we're going to be discussing in today's ABM Conversations podcast. This is me, your host, Yagneshwaran Ganesh.
And this is Manish Nepal.
All right. So today's episode is a guest episode. And we are super excited to have Jimmy Daly join us. He's been a longtime B2B content marketer, and he's someone who has advised people in the Fortune 500 companies and also run content marketing for Vero, QuickBooks, and even Animals. Welcome to the show, Jimmy.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you for having me.
Same here. And would you like to take us through a little bit about your journey so far and what you're doing right now? We know that you're going to be starting Superpath, and that's also taking off really well. So take us through the journey a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So I've been working in content marketing for a little over 10 years now. I started doing SEO for lawyers. That's how I originally discovered content marketing. I started picking up these writing gigs where I would get paid $30 to write these silly articles with titles like, DUI attorney in Kansas City, stuff like that, just like pure SEO. And I was intrigued by that world, and I decided I wanted to go deeper on the content side, less on the SEO side, and have spent the last, since then, I guess 8 or 9 years bouncing back and forth between a few agencies and a few in-house roles. I love both. I've definitely found that I like to mix it up though. I spent the last, 3+ years or so running growth at Animals, where I did sales and marketing. And then just about a month ago, as we're recording now, branched out and started my own company with backing from Animals. It's kind of like a sister company to Animals. And that this new company, Superpath, is going to be helping content marketers with their own career path. So helping them find jobs, providing training. We'll have a job board and a few other things. So very excited about that.
Absolutely. And we've also been following you and the things that you've been doing. So let's start by busting some myths around content marketing. When it comes to content marketing, you have some of the most unique observations that you've always voiced through your tweets or blogs or even podcasts. For example, you've blogged about or even talked about how Google Analytics is killing good marketing, or why trying to get your audience to subscribe to blogs doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah.
Or and how venture-backed companies in the SaaS domain struggle with content marketing. So can you talk us through a little bit about, say, 2 or 3 other myths in today's content marketing field where what we should be hyper-aware about?
Sure. So just as a little bit of context, when I was at Animals, I spent about 2 years of my time there running the sales function. And that exposed me to several hundred companies, through our sales process. So I would get on the phone with them, learn about their content problems. And it was just this amazing opportunity to talk to a lot of people who do content marketing at various size companies and understand their problems. And it also made it really easy to understand where people go wrong with content. So the first thing that I would probably highlight is that most people think of content marketing itself as the strategy. Content marketing is the field, and you should choose a content strategy after you've decided that content is even worth it. Okay, so, and I can kind of shed some light on what I mean by that. We saw so many companies approaching content in the exact same way, regardless of their business model, regardless of the types of customers they want to sell to, regardless of their annual contract values, and all of those things have a really significant effect on how you should approach a content strategy. The most common example would be, we might see a company, like an enterprise company with a long sales cycle, doing lots of top of funnel content because that's how they read about it on a HubSpot blog from 5 years ago. And as we would dig into their strategy and their analytics and the results they were getting from it, we would notice things like a huge amount of top of funnel traffic, but almost no traffic that actually generates leads, right? And no content at all to support the bottom of the funnel, you know, no content to help a sales team out as they're working through a long sales cycle. So I guess the first myth that I would highlight is that you have to work backwards from your business model to understand what type of content you should be creating, rather than just choosing to do content marketing and approaching it in a very templated way.
Right, right. And just because you said this, you know, let me also ask you this. Do you believe in this philosophy of creating specific content to specific aspects of the funnel, or how do you look at it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, okay, I guess a few things on that. Do I believe in it? 100%. Do I think there's a lot of challenges with it? Yeah, absolutely. So when I was at Animals, we found ourselves using terms like top, middle, and bottom of funnel content all the time. And several years into this, we got into a conversation, a few of us, and we realized that when we said those terms, each of us had slightly different definitions of what we meant when we said those words. And there's a lot of gray area we discovered as we kind of got our team together to talk about this. You know, top of funnel content doesn't mean the same thing to everybody. Neither does middle or bottom. So while I think it's, you know, important that you, you know, create content for each piece of the funnel, it's also really important that you sit down with the rest of your marketing team and also your sales team. Make sure that everyone's on the same page so that when I say bottom of the funnel content and you say bottom of the funnel content, we're actually talking about the same thing, because it actually turns out that people usually are talking about something slightly different.
Right, absolutely. I can resonate with that, because for some people, top of the funnel content can mean awareness. For somebody else, it could be, you know, comparison content or purely consideration content, so on and so forth. And same goes with bottom funnel as well. And I asked you this question is that, you know, a lot of people are talking about the funnel itself in a very different way. For example, recently Topo came up with this concept of double funnel. So that was, you know, quite new. And then at the end of it, when you look at the fundamentals, we are more or less talking about the same thing.
The double funnel, I haven't come across that yet. I'm curious to learn more about that. I do find that whenever people, you know, take a traditional funnel and apply their own nuances to it, the results are usually really good. You know, so I'm curious to learn more about that.
Right, right. So, okay, let's sidestep a bit. Let me ask you this. Other than the Animals blog, you know, what are your other favorite brands that you think are really killing it when it comes to content marketing? If you can share some examples and say that, or give us reasons why somebody's content marketing strategy is great, that would be fantastic to start from there.
Yeah, sure. So I can't mention the Animals blog. So that's my favorite one. I'll give you a couple others though. So I've been along for a long time, and certainly not alone in this, a big fan of the Intercom blog, for a very specific reason. And that reason is that their content team is primarily there to facilitate the internal subject matter experts' own writing. You know, so they work with someone on the sales team and someone on the product team, for example, to write their own content, because those people are really the experts in those fields. I really appreciate that. I think that's really cool that they do that. And that's the primary reason that their content is so good also. We wrote about that a couple times on the Animals blog, and we called it, or we referred to it as growing a blog the hard way, because that really is like the most challenging way, at least that I've come across, to grow a blog. Attention to detail and the quality is so high that it's been worthwhile for them. A few others that I would highlight. I think Shopify's content is fantastic. I think they've just done such a good job understanding their audience. There's just so many potential use cases, so many challenges that e-commerce retailers come across. There's such a huge volume of people that are interested in this kind of thing. It creates a ton of different content challenges. I think they've done a really fantastic job meeting all those challenges without making their blog feel overwhelming or confusing. And then I'm trying to think of another good one for you. I think the team at Podia has done a great job as well. So Podia is an online teaching platform. You know, they've been able to tap into this creator community in a really genuine way. You know, like they use their own product. The people on the team use the product. They're able to speak to these people in a way that is very authentic. You know, like, and I know that they've gotten good results from their content, but they never prioritize performance over making real connections with their readers. And so, yeah, I would definitely highlight them as another good one.
All great brands. I totally relate to the examples that you gave, because those are also our favorites, and definitely Animals is number one in that list.
Thanks.
Yeah. I would like to add some different flavor to the conversation that we are having, and let's talk about the kind of situation that we are finding ourselves into right now. Now, Jimmy, you are one of the staunchest advocates of remote work even before this pandemic took remote work to its current height. And based on your years of experience of being a fully productive remote professional, what do you think are some predictions, or maybe those are your personal opinions about the future of remote work? How is it going to go?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question. So just as a quick bit of background, I started working remotely in 2013, and I've visited offices, but I have not worked in an office since then. I started working remotely by accident. I had a job that I actually really liked, but my wife had a job opportunity in a different city, and so we planned to move. And I asked my boss, you know, I like this job, can I keep it? And they said yes. And that was my kind of accidental introduction to remote work. I don't even know another way of working anymore. You know, it's become second nature to do this. But even prior to that, you know, I was working at an agency at the time, and we were working with a client, working really closely with a client. Like, we had 12 people dedicated to a single client, and that client was 1,000 miles away in a different city. And so we're collaborating with these people on a daily basis, and it's essentially remote, even though our respective teams were in offices. And so I feel like what we're experiencing now, while for a lot of people it feels very different to work out of their home, the style of work is almost exactly the same, because either your company has some remote folks, or they have offices in other cities that you don't live in, or you have clients that are in other cities. Well, the style of work is basically identical, regardless of where you are. I think the big thing that's going to change, and we're seeing a little bit of this already, is that so many companies have attracted talent by using their offices as part of the perk, you know? So sort of cliche now to have a startup with an office that has beer on tap and a ping pong table and, you know, happy hours and all that good stuff. And a lot of that stuff is really fun. It actually can be really great for team building. But as those things become less and less relevant, I think companies are going to be forced to rethink the way that they attract talent. And what I hope happens is that they more greatly emphasize the things that are really important to people, such as, at least here in the US, like providing great health insurance is a huge challenge for companies, but is also a way to attract great people. Making sure that work-life balance is not just the individual's responsibility, but something that the company facilitates as well. Making sure that people have opportunities to get together in person when that's safe to do again, on some regular basis, quarterly or bi-yearly or whatever. And also making sure that people have outlets for water cooler style conversation on a more frequent basis. Maybe that's weekly or bi-weekly. You know, at Animals, we did that every other week. You were randomly paired with someone, and just the idea was you just chat with them about their life and get to know that person a little bit. So I hope that we see more of those things, more things that provide really, really tangible value in people's lives, make their lives better, more satisfying, make the work, more satisfying as well, and less likely to burn people out. That's what I hope happens as all these companies are shifting to remote work.
Right. That definitely sounds great, at least to me, because I've been doing remote work since the last 7 months, even before the COVID started hitting us badly. And I'm very happy that I made the move. And a lot of what you say makes me very personally happy. But obviously, remote might be the future of work that we are heading into. However, I also think that it comes with its own set of drawbacks, like, you know, isolation or lack of access to maybe the office amenities can also be a drawback, or, uncertain job accountability can be one of the drawbacks. So I think you've already touched on a few things in your previous answer, but can we go a little deeper and answer, as a remote work pro, what are two to three top tips that you can offer to remote team workers or managers to make the most of a remote work culture?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the first thing I would emphasize, something I just mentioned previously, which was making time and spending money to make sure that your team can get together in person at least once or twice a year, at the very least, so that those folks have something to look forward to, and that you can create a couple days or a week every year or whatever, to make sure that those real human connections have time and space to happen. So that's, I think that's hugely important. The other thing is that, like, kind of as you mentioned, isolation is real. It's a real challenge. And, you know, working from home is different for people who have a nice spot to work at home and no distractions, you know, versus like maybe you have children, your kids aren't in school right now. Like, that is a completely different situation, which is incredibly challenging. And so I hope that some of these companies will start taking that into consideration. You know, instead of paying for an office, maybe they can help out with childcare, or maybe they help employees find co-working spaces where they can go work a couple days a week, things like that. I think that we have to totally rethink the way that we treat and retain and keep employees happy now that those employees are facing a whole new set of challenges that are totally different than the ones that they were facing even just 5-6 months ago. And then I guess the other thing is creating those opportunities for kind of very frequent micro connections with the rest of the team. You know, it's so easy to sit down at your computer and just focus on the work and then have hours or days go by, you know, without even realizing that you haven't made any like small talk with your coworkers, that you haven't had any like real connections with those people. You've just been so focused on, is this done? You know, I have a deadline here. Hey, where's that draft? You know, sort of like the transactional communication that we all do every day at work, which is sort of how things get done, but lacks any like real human touch to it. I think there's lots of different ways that companies can facilitate that. As I mentioned, at Animals, we did these biweekly water cooler chats, but we also had kind of ad hoc groups that would get together the day after one of their favorite TV shows, and they would just get together for 30 minutes and they would all sort of hash out like what happened on the latest episode, you know, or for folks who were, you know, there's might be a group of folks who were interested in music or movies or whatever. They would get together every now and then and just like have some time to just like talk to like-minded people about the hobbies that they're interested in. Like, companies should facilitate that. It's great when an employee raises their hand to make it happen. But they shouldn't have to do that. The companies should be proactively looking for those opportunities and then empowering people to go and spend some of their, you know, paid work time doing quote unquote unproductive things, because those things will definitely make those employees happier.
Some great tips there, Jimmy. It's funny to imagine how, you know, Yag and I were colleagues at one point of time where we worked on the same roof in the same team. And that's how we met and started this whole podcasting as a side gig. And now we are here. But yeah, I think those are some of the things that people are going to miss if remote is going to be a largely, you know, popular work culture. So yeah, some great tips there. But before we go on to the next question, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors, which is Zest.is. Zest.is is on a mission to add value to the marketing community. For people who don't know much about Zest.is, it's a marketing content stream that sits on your Google Chrome browser as a new tab extension. It's a platform where you can submit and curate high-quality articles, podcasts, infographics, videos, and ebooks. Its algorithm is powered by artificial intelligence, which allows you to handpick your own personalized content feed that is specific to your unique taste.
Right. And as marketers and content creators, Manish and I, we use Zest quite a lot. And based on the feedback that we get from you guys as well, our listeners, we understand that many of you guys use Zest to promote your content as well as discover content based on your taste. And if you want to promote your high quality content to an elite set of marketing audience, then there's a good news for you. You just have to go to zest.is/contentboost and just let them know that you're coming from ABM Conversations podcast, and you get a $75 off on your first boost. All right. So Jimmy, getting back to our conversation, one of the things that I really loved when I looked through your profile in the past, and also, you know, my observation about the way you've come along, is you've been a person who has also doubled down as a salesperson as well as a marketing person. And that really, I think, is very important when it comes to content marketing or content writing. Can you tell us a little bit about, from your experience, what you've learned from this aspect, especially why is it important for content marketers to have really good sales knowledge?
Yeah, I would say that the experience of being involved in sales at Animals and eventually running our sales was the single most useful career experience I've ever had. And maybe some context on this is a little bit helpful. So when I first joined Animals, there were probably 7 or 8 people. It was really small. And our founder, Walter, was doing all the sales. And he did sales for, gosh, probably 2 or 3 years. And it was not only was it starting to burn him out, but it also just wasn't the best use of his time as a CEO. Like he needed time to do CEO things to guide our company. And sales is a very, very involved job. And so when he initially approached me about helping him out with sales, I was very apprehensive because I have no sales background. And, I was a little unsure. Do I want to spend my days on the phone? I really like quiet time to just write and get my work done. And, he convinced me that I should give it a try because I was going to learn a ton by being on the phone and talking with these people on a daily basis, really. And so I gave it a shot and I learned a lot. I learned a lot. I guess I can highlight a few of those things. The first thing I learned was that sales is very different if you're a subject matter expert and you treat it like free consulting versus if you're not a subject matter expert and just treat it like sales, like kind of what people think of as sales, right? So when I get on a call with a prospective Animals customer, we're not talking about pricing and packaging and start dates. We're talking about, you know, like, tell us your content challenges. Like, what have you tried? What has worked? What has failed? What's the makeup of your team look like? What goals are you working towards? How much traffic do you get? What's your budget like for freelancers? It's all kind of the nitty gritty details. And what we found was that that type of conversation built a lot of trust with those prospects. And I would say in pretty much every call, not every call, but many of them, there came a moment, a kind of a light bulb moment for the prospect where they realized these Animals people really know what they're talking about. Like, it's clear that they work with lots of other companies like ours and that they have a lot of experience because we could just speak to certain nuances of B2B SaaS content marketing that are just unique to our industry. And we could only do that because, like, I was also in the weeds, like doing our own marketing, pitching in with customers, like, you know, kind of doing a couple different things. And all those things gave me the experience needed to get on these calls and speak confidently about, you know, how we're helping other customers with similar problems and things like that. So that was the first thing. Free consulting is way easier than sales because it just sort of takes the pressure off of the conversations that you have. Like when you get on the phone with someone, it feels way more comfortable and it builds a lot of trust with your prospects. So that was the first thing. The other thing I would highlight is that once I started getting on the phone with these people, and I wrote a blog post for Animals, the title is something like Things I've Learned from 180 Sales Calls or something like that. But the main thing I learned once I went through that first 100 or 150 calls was that up to that time in my career, I had not spoken to many customers and no prospective customers. And that was just an enormous missed opportunity on my part. And what I realized was that sales and marketing are so often it's not that they're unaligned because they may be working towards the same goals, but they don't have a good lines of communication between them and they're not working in tandem. And I feel like that's slightly different than alignment. And in retrospect, I feel that working at companies like QuickBooks and Vero, where I was an in-house content marketer, I should have been on the phone with customers and prospects all the time. I should have been knocking on the sales team's door saying, hey, I want to get on your calls. Let me shadow them. Send me recordings. How can I help you? How can I make your life easier? Because in both of those cases, I spent a lot of time chasing keywords and building top of funnel content that did help grow traffic, but it didn't actually make much of an impact on our sales. That felt like the sales team's fault at the time. You know, as I look back, that was my fault, and I should have been all over that and really trying to figure out how to help the company make more money, because I wasn't doing that. I was just helping them get more traffic. Once I discovered this at Animals, it totally changed the way that I thought about how we were going to do content marketing for animals. So a lot of what you see on the Animals blog is me writing blog posts about things I discovered on sales calls. And sometimes we would feed that content right back to the people who helped us sort of initially discover those problems. But often we would find, like, the one example that you brought up about like why VC-backed companies struggle with content marketing, that came up all the time. No company ever came to us and said, hey, we just raised money and we're struggling with content marketing. That wasn't how it came up. But lots of folks came to us and said, we just raised money and now we can really invest in content marketing. What should we do? And what we found was this kind of litany of problems that those types of people faced. And so we wrote that article as a way to speak to companies who have raised money and now are ready to invest in content marketing as kind of like just a list of things to be careful about as you like get into it. People really resonated with that article. I don't know that it ever got more than 2,000 page views, but it helped us close several hundred thousand dollars in new business because it was speaking to the right person at the right time in the buying cycle. And that was just felt like such a formative moment, you know, to understand that no keyword research could have ever led us to write that article. The only way we would have understood that problem is by hearing people talk about it on sales calls, you know, sitting down and really giving some thought to what the real challenge was for them and then how we could help them through it. So anyway, sorry, that was a very long-winded way of saying that sales taught me that I didn't really understand customers as well as I thought I did. And it also taught me that so many of the ways that content marketers come up with ideas, keyword research being like the primary one, lead them astray. And what they ought to be doing is getting on the phone with prospects and customers, listening very closely, and building content strategies around that.
Right. I absolutely love what you just said. And I just want to ask you as a follow-up to what you explained, just that, you know, when you talk to customers and when you spend a lot of time with salespeople or talking to customers, of course, I understand the kind of topics that you write will change. But how did it actually change the way you wrote things? I mean, was it about more examples or was it more talking about a specific use case? How did it exactly go and impact the way you wrote your content?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think here's the best way I would explain it. There's a great blog post from a blog called, I think it's called Common Cog, about this idea of the metagame. What this means, especially in the context of animals and the work that we were doing there, is there's the game, which is, you know, helping companies do content marketing. And then there's this metagame, which is kind of understanding their problems, the customer's problems, even better than they do, right? And articulating it in a way to them that just makes so much sense, right? Like, I spent a lot of time at Animals trying to figure out, trying to draw a line around abstract concepts, right? Or trying to like take information that I would collect from customers and then package it up in a way so that they could read it and say, oh my gosh, that is the thing that I've been trying to understand. And here it is. I finally found it. This actually got easier with practice. This idea of a metagame is kind of interesting because it forces you to try to understand these problems better than the customer, as I mentioned. It also forces you to think really deeply about what we were doing at Animals, what the customer was doing at their company, and how a partnership could make sense other than the very obvious ways, right? And it turns out the way that we created value for customers was almost always non-obvious. It was so infrequently helping them grow traffic, and it was so frequently long tail challenges that we could never have quite anticipated until we really, 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 really deeply understood where they were coming from. And so that is the thing that we spent so much time on. So a lot of the things you'll read on the Animals blog are things that have not been written about in content marketing before. And that's very, very intentional. Like I never really cared whether or not those posts got, whether or not they were widely read. But I cared a lot that we would get feedback from folks that would say, this is the thing I've been looking for and I've never been able to find it myself, or I've never been able to articulate it in that way. Or I didn't even know I had that problem, but now I recognize it and we're going to address it. Things like that. So that was the kind of the very specific way that it changed the way that we did our own content marketing.
So to sum up, can I say that it's more about writing for your customers than writing for a prospect based on search?
Yes, I think that's fair. And I think search has its place. I think it can be really valuable. I think that search was not particularly useful for animals because, and this may apply to other businesses, so it's worth noting. We were working in an environment with a very low volume of sales with a very high contract value. And so there was really no reason for us to rank highly for a keyword because we really weren't concerned about volume, right? We were very concerned about, you know, targeting very specific types of companies and negotiating big deals with them. Search really didn't help us in that at all. You know, as I think about this new company I'm starting, Superpath, actually I think search can be incredibly valuable because volume will be very important. And so it depends. I'm highlighting that because like that nuance is really important, and the type of content you would might consider doing depends significantly on that.
Right. I'm super glad that you brought Superpath into this conversation, because this is something that got excited both me and Manish. In the sense, it's like there are certain people that we always associate with certain companies. Like to us, Jimmy was for animals. Dave Gerard was for Drift.
Right.
So yeah, can you share a little bit about what you plan with Superpath? What is your broad vision with the company, and what we all can expect out of it?
Yeah, absolutely. My main goal with Superpath is to legitimize content marketing as a career path. And what I mean by that is so many people discover content by accident, realize there's opportunity there, do it for a little while, and then go on to do some other thing, kind of building on the skills they learned as a content marketer. And I think that's great. But I would like what I mean when I say legitimize it, I would like, you know, high school and college aged kids to say, I think I want to go into content when I go into the workforce, I hope that over time it becomes this career field with that is better recognized, right? That creates better opportunities for the people that work in it, that provides more clear paths forward, right? Like I know a lot of people that have been very successful taking their content skills and going on to do other things, you know, going on to be CMOs or start their own companies or, you know, lead marketing or do whatever, you know, based on this kind of core set of skills, which is incredibly valuable. That's kind of the broad mission. The way that I hope to execute that is Superpath is going to be a career resource hub. So we'll have courses. We'll have plenty of free stuff. We have a Slack community, a podcast, newsletter, et cetera. We're also going to have a job board. And we're also going to have a recruiting service for folks who are hiring content people. And so we've already started doing this, even though we're kind of pre-launch right now. I don't have an official website up yet, where, you know, folks who are hiring content roles can come to us, you know, we'll interview them about the job and publish that video interview. I'll write an analysis of the role and tell you what I really think of it. All of this is geared towards advocating for the content marketer, you know, making sure that they really understand what these jobs entail and whether or not I think they're good opportunities. And then as content marketers are applying for those jobs, I'm helping them with their applications. I'm, making sure that they're not underselling themselves. I'm reviewing their resumes. I'm making recommendations on what they should ask for a salary, things like that. So all of that is sort of geared towards career development for content marketers and making sure that they're getting the best opportunities that they possibly can. And helping those companies fill roles which have traditionally been very difficult to fill. So that's a quick summary. All that stuff's coming soon. Like I said, no official website yet. We'll have that up in a week or so, and then we'll really be getting to work.
Yeah, and we've been following the progress of Superpath from a very close proximity, although we are in this side of the world. I am part of your CMCZ Slack group also, so I keep posted with the progress there, as well as I follow you on Twitter. And I, like you said, I already see you tweeting about content marketers underselling themselves in their resume, and you trying to bridge the gap between recruiters and people who are looking for opportunities. So that's great. We wish you congratulations and all the best from our side on your new venture. But here's a follow-up question to that answer. Is this going to be, is remote going to be at the heart of what Superpath is trying to do?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think primarily we will be helping companies fill remote roles, primarily. I just had a call the other day with a customer who wants to fill a role locally, and I'm in the process of trying to convince them that they should do it remotely. so that'll be of the customers we've talked to so far, almost all are remote, and the rest we're trying to convince. That won't always be the case. And for some companies, I'm sure we'll try to help them fill local roles for whatever reason ends up being important to them. But I'll definitely be advocating for remote whenever I talk to companies trying to fill roles.
Awesome. No surprise there. We want to try something new that we haven't tried with a lot of guests in our previous episodes. We want to go into a rapid fire round if you have time.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
So the first question is, what do you prefer for your work-related communication, email or Slack?
Email, 100%. Can't stand Slack. I think Slack is really great for community building. So I spend a lot of time in Slack, but I prefer email. I think that it is actually asynchronous, and I like that about it. And just sort of as a side note, I just recently started using a new email app called Spark, and I think it is fantastic. I think it's really good.
Right. I use Spark, so I can relate to what you're saying.
Oh, nice.
Question number two. If you had a time machine to go back to, say, 2015, what's one piece of marketing advice that you would give to your younger self?
Without question, it would be get on the phone and talk with prospects and customers and do it every single week. That is by far the biggest regret of my career to date, is that I was so focused on being a content person that I missed this huge opportunity to serve the businesses I was working in a way that would have been much more impactful. And actually, on that note, I recently read an article by Dave Kellogg, who's an entrepreneur and investor, called "Marketing Exists to Make Sales Easier." And if you had showed me that article in 2015, I would have scoffed at it. Today, I believe it to be true 100%. And any marketing that I do at Superpath and whatever else I do in the future will be based on that premise. And I would recommend reading that article, particularly if you're earlier on in your content career or marketing career.
Awesome. Will do. Question number three. What's one tip you have for fellow content marketers listening to this show to create great content?
Draw a line around an abstract concept. I think that is really a really useful way to create content that looks, feels, and reads differently than everything else out there. I see so many folks working off of the same tired SEO templates, it's a little different working in content marketing, but when I see an article that is, clearly targeted for a certain keyword, it just turns me off, and I just lose interest in it because I can almost predict exactly how the article will be structured and what it's going to say. But when I find something that explains an idea in a new way or presents a new perspective on something, some common theme, or when it's just like a controversial approach, like whatever it is that is just makes it feel different. It actually feels like writing and not content marketing. And those are different things. I would say that trying to draw lines around abstract concepts is important because, if you work in marketing or you work in content marketing, there'll be so many things you discover that are not documented. And they're just not documented because people are probably off chasing keywords and not sitting and kind of looking closely at the things around them. And when you're able to take an abstract concept like for example, VC-backed companies struggling with content marketing, that's to my knowledge, it hadn't been written about before, and it was something that no amount of keyword research or even customer interviews would have led me to write about. It was only through like very, very carefully listening, kind of identifying patterns, and then, you know, drawing a line. What I mean by drawing a line is just packaging it in a way that takes these kind of vague ideas and kind of subtle patterns and making it a very clear and succinct idea. So that would be my main recommendation. And then I guess to just kind of add to that a little bit is to make your writing sound and feel as little like content marketing as possible. Kind of like I mentioned, it's very easy to tell when an article is content marketing versus something else like idea sharing. You know what I mean? If an article is designed to share a new idea or a new approach, a new perspective on an old idea, that feels very different than an article that is designed to target a keyword. And so I would suggest for all content marketers, trying to make your content look, feel, and read as little like content as possible.
Thing that you said reminds me 100% of Intercom, like you said earlier. You know, the reason that their content is so good is because they have democratized content marketing to the entire company and not just to the marketing team. And that's where great ideas come from. I mean, they talk about these abstract ideas like jobs to be done, and even the ebooks and other long form content is amazing. It's not, you know, catered to SEO based hacks and techniques. It's amazing. Love that tip, Jimmy. Question number four, what's one thing that you wish remote teams would stop doing?
Oh, interesting. I wish that remote teams would make a clear distinction between synchronous and asynchronous communication. I wish that people would stop using Slack in a way that is like, for example, like this happens all the time in companies. Someone posts a question in Slack saying, "Hey, where is this thing or that thing?" Or, "Hey, has anyone talked to this customer?" or whatever. And not making it clear whether or not they need an answer right away. And then everyone scrambles to go respond to it. You know what I mean? It's like, it should be very clear to the people that you work with whether or not something is synchronous, meaning this needs to happen in real time, versus this is asynchronous and could you just get back to me in 24 hours? You know, in Animals, we started documenting processes around that and actually using different tools to facilitate different types of communication so that it would be more clear to people whether or not something was urgent or non-urgent. I think part of the challenge with a tool like Slack, and one of the reasons I have really grown disillusioned with it, is because it just creates this kind of constant monitoring where you always are looking, always seeing like, am I needed? Is someone asking for something? Have I missed something? You know, oh, there's a thread going. I better jump in on it. It's just like, and then you go through it and you realize none of this is urgent. None of this needs to happen in real time. It's just wasted all this time and brain power that I could have been doing deep work with. So that's a big thing. Yeah, documenting. I think potentially a good way to do this would be to say, Slack is for real time. If I ping you on Slack, I need you now. And then everything else can happen on email or in a project management tool like Asana or Basecamp or Trello or whatever, you know, whatever tool that you use for that. That drives me crazy. I definitely wish companies would take that more seriously.
Right. And the comedy of error only compounds if your remote team is scattered all over the globe and not just situated in one time zone.
You're so right. Yeah. Because it's for someone, it could be, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning and they're typing something out on Slack, and for their teammate, they could be like rushing to respond at 11 PM when they really don't need to be.
Exactly. Well, question number five and last question is, what's your favorite marketing podcast, marketing book, any marketing related content that you love?
That's a good question. I'm laughing because I don't listen to many marketing podcasts. Okay. I will give you a few examples. Okay. Well, a few things. I listen to this podcast, Masters in Business from Bloomberg, which I think is fantastic. It's more of a business and investing podcast. Lots and lots of good marketing lessons to be learned there. In terms of marketing specifically, I think that the book Good to Great by Jim Collins is fantastic. I keep a copy on my desk and reference it often. I think that I think of it as like a seminal work in business strategy. And I think that's a fantastic book. I will also add that I think listening to podcasts reading books, magazines, et cetera, that have nothing to do with business or marketing can actually provide an enormous amount of value for marketers if you're listening and reading closely. I'll just give you a quick example. I read this book sort of recently called Barbarian Days, A Surfing Life. This is one of the best books I've ever read. It's an autobiographical version of this guy's life. He spent his entire life traveling the world surfing and writes about it beautifully. And it's just a great read. I took all kinds of interesting business lessons from that book. You know, like, just for example, like, this guy was so determined to live a life as a surfer, you know, that he employed all these different strategies and worked incredibly hard to make it happen. You know, that he was chasing this lifestyle and was willing to work very hard for it. And I found that to be very inspiring for my own work, you know, and it had me thinking about, I would look at my day and say, like, how much of this is necessary and how much am I just doing because it's just come to be a habit that I do these things? You know, like, where am I really making impact? And kind of asking yourself those broader questions is so important. And I think the inspiration for doing that so often comes from, you know, just reading and listening to things that really excite us, or, you know, in a personal way, not necessarily a professional way, and then looking for ways to apply it at work.
Right, absolutely. I can't agree more. And, for me also, when I look at things or when I think back, a lot of inspiration for marketing to me comes from reading non-business or non-marketing books. And sometimes it suddenly, you know, gives you an inspiration, and then that also can translate into your work.
Right.
So, yeah. As we get to the close of this conversation, we have had lots of takeaways, and I'm sure when we both go and re-listen to this, there are like tons and tons of nuggets of wisdom. So as we come to the close, is there any parting message that you would love to share with our audience?
As I think about content marketing and I think about the future of content marketing, I think that this is just a field that I've become so passionate about. And it has been integral in me creating a life that I enjoy leading, right? Like the ability to build a career writing and helping people is so powerful. I hope to help other people discover that same thing. It's just the field is so rich with opportunity. And that's kind of why I'm so inspired to get rolling on Superpath, is because I want to help other people kind of form a similar experience to what I've been so fortunate to have. So I think that's, I think I'll leave it there. Content is just wow. It can really be such a powerful tool for businesses, but also for individuals too.
Right. And, our people generally like to, connect with our guests and take conversations further, as they listen. So where can people find you and how can they connect with you?
Yeah, sure. Hit me up on Twitter anytime. Jimmy_Daly, DALY. Always love chatting with people on Twitter. And then also I have a Slack group, the Content Career Growth Slack group. And you can get the details about that at superpath.co.
All right. So that's that for today's episode. And thank you so much, Jimmy, for joining us. And this is us, Yag and Manish, signing off. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations Podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.